EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merger 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs that's on it?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
County dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
Let's not take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. Hello and welcome to the show, everyone, wherever in the world you are listening from tonight. This episode, we are joined by Robert Earl White from New Jersey with an account of a triangular-shaped craft that crashed and was witnessed by his mother on their property in 1991 and the cover-up that followed. Before we hear from Robert, I want to give a shout-out to Joe Howard from Massachusetts. Hi, Joe. How you doing, buddy? Joe is a fan of the show. He's a trucker, and this podcast keeps his mind going on those long journeys. I will get a bumper sticker out to you so you can whack it on the rig. Threes and eights, good buddy. And if you've had an encounter you would like to share on this show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com or via the contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. And while you're there, check out some of the cool stuff we have on the site. If you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles Podcast. You can also find the link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the show, Robert.
Hello.
Thanks for coming on today, man.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are coming to us today from New Jersey.
Correct. In the U.S., New Jersey.
And you've come on today to share a possible UFO crash close to your family's property in 1991?
Yes, that is correct.
Would you like to start at the very beginning for our listeners, please, Robert?
Yes. On April 21st, 1991, around 10:18 p.m., my family witnessed something that would change our lives forever. My aunt, who lived right next door to my house, went to use the bathroom, and she witnessed something hovering out of her back window above the tree line, not making any noise, elongated, completely silent, slightly above the tree line. After seeing this, she left her bathroom, went into her bedroom, and called my house next door, which at the time, my mother and her two girlfriends were watching a baseball game. My mother got up. She answered the phone. After she answered the phone, she went to the back window. My aunt said, Beth, my mother's name, Beth, look out the back window. There's something hovering above the woods. After my mother She saw it, her two friends off the couch come running to the window, and they're watching this craft hover. It had blue lights. You could see three blue lights and a bluish white light coming from the middle of it. As they're watching this, all of a sudden, sparks start shooting out of this craft. And then all of a sudden, a bright white flash, a huge white flash, and it just shot straight to the ground. Instantly, my mother hung up the phone, and she called 911. When the police answered, she reported that some sort of aircraft has just crashed, and she hung up the phone. Now, to give the listeners an idea of the landscape, we were country folk. We lived near a marsh and a creek. There was a lot of water and mud, and there was a bridge where only one car at a time could go across. And in that, behind our house, it was a lot of marsh foxtails, a lot of mud and a creek. And that's where this thing went down. So after my mother hung up the phone, about 10 minutes later, the police came to our house. They took my mother's report. My mother never said UFO because people would have thought she was crazy. And after that, the police left. 25 minutes later, the men in black show up to our house. There was two black Lincoln Town Cars, two men in black, and one man from the Air Force came knocking on our door. At this time, my mother and her two friends were still inside the house. And at this time, first responders were slowly starting to arrive at the scene. But at the time, my family, we never were able to leave our house. We never left. So the men in black and the gentlemen from the Air Force, they come, they knock on the door. My mother lets them in. They sit my mother and her two friends down on the couch. They pull out a notepad, pieces of paper, and a pencil, and they lay it down on a coffee table, and they tell each of the women to draw three different kinds of aliens. And I kid you not, I know it sounds insane. And my mom's two friends started laughing, you know, thinking it was a joke. And the men in black asked my mom's two friends to go ahead and leave. So they got up and they left. To keep in mind, this was around 11 o'clock at night by the time they got to this point. And after my mom's friends left, my mother proceeded to draw three different kinds of aliens, a Nordic, a gray, and one she called the Blues. And after she did this, the men in black talked to her and they talked to the Air Force gentleman. And the Air Force gentleman was trained in hypnosis. And they proceeded to hypnotize my mother and to cause regression therapy, basically. And for the first time in my mother's life, she started remembering all of these events that was happening to her. And after that happened, the men in black said, "Do you have any questions?" My mother asked three questions. Three simple questions. She asked, "Are these things dangerous?" The men in black replied, "If these things are dangerous, do you think we would still be here?" My mom said, "Okay, thank you." The second question my mother asked was, "Why don't people know about these things?" And the men in black replied, "We are doing everything we can by preconditioning people. Within the next 10 years, you will see signs of aliens and UFOs in all media, music, books, and media." And my mom said, "Okay." And after going through this hypnosis session, my mom really just came to the realization of how real these things actually are. And as a mother, and she also took care of my elderly grandfather, So her third and final question, and keep in mind, she could have asked, you know, any question about technology, knowledge of the universe, but she was just a mother trying to protect her elderly grandfather and her 3.5-year-old son, me. I was 3.5 years old at the time. And she asked the men in black, when these beings come and take me, what would happen if something happened to my elderly grandfather and my child, and I'm not here to take care of them? And the men in black replied, they use small gray aliens that stay behind. So if anything happened to your grandfather or your son, they would have you back. And the men in black, they snapped their fingers. So after that, my mom said, okay, thanks. The men in black said, tomorrow there are going to be multiple UFO investigators, media, the news, newspapers, and you will say it was a helicopter, or we will take your son away. My mother said, yes, I understand. And the men in black and the gentlemen from the Air Force, they left. The rest of the night, my mom remained on the phone with helicopters. There was 3 to 4 helicopters, search and rescue helicopters, one with a thermal camera out looking. And my mother was on the phone with them, giving them directions to the area where this thing crashed. So that was from my family's perspective of what happened. And while this was all going on at the actual scene, and after sharing the story and finding out more from witnesses, what happened as the firefighters got there around 30 to 40 minutes after. So keep in mind, the men in black got to our house 25 minutes after. That's impressive. So they go, the firefighters, they get to the scene 30 or 40 minutes after. And as they're coming down this road, and to the left is marshland and water, and they're coming up to this single lane bridge, to the left they see a Coast Guard boat with armed men on it in uniform, Coast Guard uniform, and there was a man on the land, like patrolling the land, and he pointed at the fire truck and he told them the situation is under control, and he ordered the firefighters to turn back around. And that's exactly what the firefighters did. So they went back to the firehouse, and as they were talking, some of them had their suspicions, and some of the people that were there got nosy. So they, a couple hours later, you know, went back to the scene, and then they witnessed flatbeds removing things with black tarps. And there was a tree cutting service that was actually brought out to the area to remove a couple of trees so they could get certain equipment. Whatever this thing was that went down in multiple pieces. And the strangest thing, there was no fire marks. My grandmother went down the next day and she saw where the reeds were all messed up. And as the firefighters were pulling up from their high elevation of the fire truck, they could see that the marsh was all gouged up. There was huge fresh rifts going throughout the marsh as something tore it up. And afterwards, my grandmother seeing these markings and no fire marks or anything like that afterwards. The following day, MUFON investigators came. Our local news for Philadelphia came and reported on the case twice. The newspapers came. At the time, my family used an anonymous name. They did not want to be known publicly. They did not want to, you know, put my life in danger or be called crazy or to have all the publicity. They all used anonymous names or just Mrs. W or Mrs. H. They played it really safe. My mother did exactly what the men in black told her to do, and she was terrified of losing me. So, you know, she said it was a helicopter when she was on the news. But later on, MUFON came out at a second time where they actually started hypnotizing my mother, just like the Men in Black did. And they did get recordings of this. They do have records, and that's what I'm in the process of trying to hunt down and find these actual tapes that were recorded. And the first time MUFON came there, there was a lot of strange things in the article that I found. One of the strange things being that the investigator did the investigation at 12 o'clock at night when it was completely dark and you couldn't really see anything 2 days later. But my family, my aunt who lived next door, said she remembers seeing MUFON investigators in our backyard taking pictures of things and covering the whole area. And a lot of things were covered up. And basically, my family kept quiet about it. My mother stopped talking to MUFON. She was afraid of, if she went public, would her son grow up as having the crazy UFO mom? We lived in a very country, very religious area, and my family just didn't want any parts of it. And 30 plus years later, I finally find the articles. And in the articles, on record, they have each conversation with the local Air Force base, the local Army base, the flight administrations, local airports, all saying that they had no aircraft in the area. There was a lot of proper paperwork that was done on this in the articles. And in the documentary I have on YouTube, you can find in the description the actual articles of the story. And it has the local news report. They have that written out. And all of these military bases were saying it wasn't theirs. The Coast Guard was involved. The Air Force was involved. These gentlemen wearing black suits and black hats, no sunglasses. It was raining at the night of the incident. The clouds were at 1,100 feet. We actually have information on the exact weather at the time. And so for this thing to be hovering, it was definitely under 1,100 feet and slightly above a tree line. And there was so many reports. This was also witnessed by like five other people, not besides the people that were in my house and my aunt's house, other people that were driving, other witnesses, which the Men in Black, they actually went house to house. And they asked people, what did they see? What did they hear? And when they said anything or nothing, they reassured them that it was a helicopter. Although officially no helicopter was ever reported missing, nor did any helicopter was discovered. It wasn't discovered. It just never happened. They talked about it, and then that was it. No one ever talked about it again. No helicopter, no aircraft. No, nothing was officially discovered. And without no proof, you just stopped talking about it. And my mother struggled with it. And she was a abductee. And she had many, many experiences. And after these hypnosis sessions, my mother started reliving these things more and more and more. And these experiences continued. And it was a lifelong battle. And unfortunately, you know, my mother lost her life. And I finally found this information 2 months after. And unfortunately, she isn't here. But I'm working with many other great people around the world who have shared experience. And we're trying to get out there to help people to be able to talk about these things without the fear of ridicule and rejection and laughter. So that's what we're doing here at the Order of Light and my little mission. And that's my family story. And each day I keep finding a little bit more.
That's great. You're trying to get answers for your mother.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's great.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
Let's talk about face masks for a moment. There are good, well-meaning people out there with mental or medical conditions that make wearing a face mask very difficult, if not impossible. I'm aware of people who have been verbally attacked and ridiculed for not wearing a mask. That's just not right. For those of you who live in America, there are laws in place that protect those with physical or mental conditions. This is where MedCards.net comes in. MedCards.net provide medical alert cards, which display information that clearly indicates complications to wearing a face mask, along with information regarding the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1986, which makes it illegal for discrimination to occur due to such conditions. The cards are available in medical red or medical green, complete with a medical lanyard to be worn around the neck. The lanyard features a breakaway closure that prevents choking in case of an accident. Don't fear going out in public any longer. If you or someone you know has a mental or physical condition that prevents you from wearing a mask, go to medcards.net and order your cards today. Cards are shipped the next business day at no cost. Shipping is included in the price. That's right, all cards are shipped free of charge and include a medical lanyard in your choice of colour at no extra cost. So head over to medcards.net now, and if you use the coupon code UFO, you will save an extra 10%. That is UFO to save an extra 10%. Don't wait, visit medcards.net and get your card while they're in stock and tell them Nick sent you.
Does your family still own the property?
No. They moved probably sometime in the mid-90s. We left. At the time, it was my grandfather's house and my mother. We lived there with the family. And, we don't have that property. I think my grandmother knows the people that live there now. But the area where the craft went down, it's the road is closed. The bridge closed the day the crash went. And the bridge has not reopened, and it's been closed. So the whole road is closed, and a lot of people go there. A lot of people like fishing there. And I've been going there and taking people there and showing them the site. And it's a really nice place, and there's a lot of energy there. And it's a good place to go. So it's accessible.
Because if I went there, I probably wouldn't take a fishing rod. I'd probably take a metal detector.
I'm actually talking to a few people that are into that, and we are really thinking of doing the same thing because there has to be a piece of debris left. Because of the landscape, it would have been very easy for a piece of metal to sink in the mud and just go a foot underneath.
You know, because, yeah, I mean, if it's something like a field, you know, people can go over that with like a fine-tooth comb. But like marshland and all that, yeah, I imagine it'd be a lot difficult.
Yes, and I was also actually talking to someone that worked for nuclear energy and testing the water, but from it being so many years, there would be no way to take a radioactive, you know, sample from the water area. And the area that we have it kind of pinned to is still roughly a large area, especially if it exploded. You know, debris can really spread out. So we know the general area, but as far as where stuff could be, it's a good, and it's pretty hard to get up in there. You definitely need a little boat and some waders. That we have an animal here called a muskrat. It's almost like our version of a otter. But they're like these little rodent rats that live in the marsh, and the people around here eat them. We're country.
Good old country grub.
Yeah, exactly. And but that's that. And it's very easy to get there. And we're trying to do that. At the same time, I'm working with many people within MUFON trying to get the story out there. And I found the reporters' names that were involved with the case. And we're trying to get out there and see if these gentlemen are still alive. There were some pretty big names that were involved, from Bud Hopkins. There was another gentleman, Richard Butler, a bunch of other people in MUFON at that time. And they were very interested in the case and, well, with good being. But at the time, unfortunately, my aunt is still alive now, but she does not want to come publicly. It's a shame. She'll talk about it to anyone face to face, but she don't want to be on camera. It's a shame. And she's just a very soft-spoken, big churchgoer, you know. I was actually a pastor for many years. So, these weren't things that I just openly talked about by any means.
And you've obviously contacted MUFON recently.
Yes. And they've been helping me put everything together. And the cool thing is, we've been talking about the extraterrestrial that was shot at McGuire Air Force Base and Fort Dix here in New Jersey back in the 70s. George A. Filer, he runs the National UFO Center, does a lot of work with MUFON, and he was a retired Air Force intelligence major, and he actually chased UFOs over England back in his time when he was serving and debriefed some very high personnel within the military. And he's been going through a lot of his contacts and sharing my story, trying to find that golden gem. I did locate Bud Hopkins' archives that are like probably an hour from me, but they have not been officially archived. They're at a university. So that's a really big mess to get into. You know, I can't imagine how many boxes of information. And there's just a lot of stuff I still got to do, but I'm just trying to find a more definite lead. You know, a definite like, hey, this person has this information, and then try to contact that person from there if they're still with us, unfortunately.
Okay, so you certainly got your hands full at the research side of things at the minute. And also you've got your YouTube channel as well, and because you did a documentary about this crash on there, which people can find the link in the description.
Yes, and that's what started all of this. And I put something together called The Order of Light. And what we're doing, we're just trying to produce a lot of content that is enlightened, you know, positive, and we're making a safe place for people that have had an experience and haven't felt safe with being able to share it. They can come share their experience with hopes that they can find someone else that has had their experience so they can connect and find answers by sharing with one another. Because that's what I believe, that's how we grow as a society, is by learning from one another. And by doing that, we can answer a lot of the questions we have ourselves. And it's just a disclosure movement. We're trying to tell people that it's here. We're not waiting around for our governments of the world to tell us their idea of what's going on. We're just making it happen, you know? If we believe it is happening, who can tell us that it's not?
Certainly, we can't wait for them to give us the answers.
Yeah, exactly. Because the problem is, we all know, I'm sure your listeners know, they've had a lot of the answers for a very long time. Unfortunately, the reason why my case went like clockwork is because they had a bunch of practice at this. Recently, I found another article from 1986, 5 years prior to mine, where the same fire chief of my town, which this is important to say, I live very close to a nuclear plant, which that would be a whole nother podcast to talk about extraterrestrials, UFOs, and nuclear energy of any sort. But I live very close to a nuclear plant. That's why the Coast Guard was at that site so fast, because they patrol the nuclear plants. they are in charge of protecting that. So when something was hovering near a nuclear plant, believe me, they knew about it. Well, going back to 1986, 5 years prior to this, from Dover Air Force Base, which was the Air Force gentleman that came to our house, they had another incident where, from Delaware's perspective at the Air Force Base, they saw a blue hovering light near the nuclear plant. And the Lower Alloways Creek fire chief, which was involved with our case, he's the one that saw all that and turned back around when the Coast Guard told him to. When all that happened, they were all in contact with the Coast Guard, the Dover Air Force Base, and the fire chief of Lower Alloways Creek, the same exact players that were involved with my case 5 years later. So they've definitely had practice with this, you know, and there are cases much older than mine. And it explains how they did such an amazing job at covering it up.
They are certainly well rehearsed in these kind of events.
Yes, they are. But there was one thing they didn't plan on. The little four-year-old boy that was there that would grow up and lose a lot because of this, you know? And they didn't plan on that. Surprise.
Going back to the witnesses, have you been able to track down any of the original fire crew? Maybe they've retired now.
Yes, I've talked to them. Don't want to be on camera. I've had many witnesses message me on Facebook in part two of my documentary. They gave me permission to post up what they wrote me, but block out their names. That's as much as they were willing to come forward. I even suggested to them, hey, can I have you on camera and just block out your face? And people are still kind of really don't want to talk about it. They're not afraid to tell someone that they know something about it or it happened or anything like that. But when it comes to going public with it, no, they are very hesitant. But I am looking for more people that would come on camera, and I have them. But, you know, there were certain witnesses that I really wanted to, but, you know, where they are in life and they have kids and the cycle repeats. And the area, unfortunately, hasn't changed that much, you know?
That's a good thing.
Yeah. So people just, you know, want to have a normal life.
So you just going to keep on researching, keep on digging.
Keep on digging. And, you know, I'm looking at the skies every night and trying to find new leads and trying to find others that have had stories and help them get it out there. Recently, I had an ex-security guard that worked at the nuclear plant that was close to where the UFO crashed in my family's case. And back in 1977, they had a UFO fly over the nuclear plant, and it set off all the radio active radiation alarms, sent them all off for about 30 minutes. And no sooner than it came on, it went off. And the next day, the whole security team was fired. They were all fired, the whole security team. And I just had him come forward with his story, which plays a huge part within, you know, my case. It's all connected here in New Jersey. In North Jersey, we have the Nike nuclear missile site, and there's been a lot of activity up there. I've been working with a couple guys that have done a lot of research within that, and we're starting to see a bigger connection, and the theme seems to be energy. It's very interesting. Also with like reservoirs and lakes, it can be natural energy or man-made energy. They're very interested, whatever these things are.
There is definitely a connection, yeah, because I know Hastings wrote about the nuclear arms dumps and stuff and the nuclear warheads.
Yeah.
I was going to say, have you thought about doing LIDAR maps? Trying LIDAR?
Look, I don't know what that is.
It's light detection and ranging. If you Google it, in the UK, there's planes that would go over and they do this LIDAR. So it's, say if there's like an old Roman fort maybe and it's below the ground, it would be picked up in like LIDAR. And it's really interesting. It's, they haven't covered the whole of the UK, but they've covered a great deal of it. And I'm pretty sure you'd be able to get the same thing over there. Maybe they've done a survey of an area.
Like the underground sonar, basically.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
A survey, almost.
It's LIDAR, LIDAR.
LIDAR. Okay.
Yes, definitely worth checking out. You might be able to pick up some ones already done. Obviously, you wouldn't be able to do it yourself because you need all this bit of equipment and stuff. But
yeah,
maybe worth checking out. You might be able to pick up something there.
I'm sure you could see like if there was anything. There's so many things. I've even tried going through the Google satellite Earth satellite pictures going back to years, you know, to see if like the next following year, I could see like trees that were missing from them cutting it down, you know, trying to do that. And of course, that satellite picture for those years is missing. So, you know how it goes.
Yeah. No, digest.
I've really thought of everything. And it is interesting. Online, you find that the bridge was closed. It says just 1991. It don't really say when. And the only people that really, really know when that bridge closed were the people that witnessed the crash. And I personally believe it wasn't necessarily to keep people from going there, but I believe it was from all the heavy trucks they had coming across there. You know, it maybe, you know, took some of the integrity of the bridge, because after that, it just stayed closed. And it's still closed, and the bridge is kind of abandoned, but it's a really, really, really cool place. And where I live, you know, it's just a nuclear plant. When people think New Jersey, they don't think about this part of New Jersey. We are far from New York City. We're down south, and we're just cut off from everyone. No major highways around us for about 30 minutes each way, and so I'm trying to do this to just build a little tourism and to have people, you know, notice this forgotten area, because something truly remarkable happened, you know, and it changed my life forever. But I couldn't talk about these things. And don't get me wrong, I would share it with people I was really, really close with, you know, and sometimes they would believe me. And sometimes they want it, and it would just devastate me when someone I really loved, I felt close to, known for years, I would finally build up the courage to bring it up casually while we're watching a UFO movie or something. And then they laugh at me, you know, like, oh, it would break my heart. And as a child, I watched my mom at parties, the same thing when I was, you know, 5, 6 years old, and we would be at parties around, you know, bonfire. And someone would bring up something about aliens, and my mom would start telling them everything that happened. They would laugh at her. She would run off, start crying. So I learned at a young age, if I want to be successful, you know, I need to just keep my mouth shut, not talk about these things. You know, I went on to be a pastor. I was in a Christian metal band, signed, toured all over. I moved to Turkey. I was an English teacher for 2 years in Turkey in the Middle East. I've been all over the place. It was so unfortunate that I found this right after my mother's passing. You know, that devastated me, because this would have been so much easier just having her tell the story on camera. And she would have, if I would have had those articles. But, you know, she always remained silent. And, you know, so it's like my life mission now to make sure that people can talk about these things and just kind of accept them, move forward, and, you know, find other ways to deal with these things. And the best way to do that is by talking to others that have been through the same thing.
Absolutely.
And that's what I'm trying to do, to make sure come together, get this out so we can finally be able to talk about these things and learn more, you know?
I hear you.
Yep. That's what we gotta hope for.
Yeah,
we're trying, and you can't give up. We're trying to get the story out there, and I'm learning a lot more, and I plan to do a lot more with telling the story and bringing new evidence as I find it, and I find more people willing to come forward, actually on camera. That's the day I'm looking for.
Wish you the best of luck. If you want to get in contact with Robert, all the links are below in the description and on the UFO Chronicles website.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
I really appreciate you coming on today, Robert.
Yep. I loved being here.
That's a real interesting story, that is.
Yeah.
I certainly hope we can learn more, so you'd have to keep us updated.
Yes, I will for sure. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
That is all we got for you today. Stay updated and follow the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We got more fascinating guests on the way, as well as the Halloween special. So keep those paranormal encounters coming in. Till next time, stay safe out there and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.